Washington's, as deliverer, that is the commander-in-chief of the Revolutionary Army, or the American Army, is Washington, like Moses, was a nation's lawgiver. Not very many know that the Constitution of the United States was truly out of Washington's initiative. And so I attach the Constitution to Washington as a nation's lawgiver. Remember Moses, God used Moses and said, establish civil government. He used Moses not only to establish moral law, ritual law, but also civil law for the new nation of Israel. God used Moses to deliver to them the laws of their nation. I judge between one another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. They came to him inquiring of how to manage the affairs of their local or tribal affairs. And so remember what God did. If you go down further, that column, his father-in-law taught him to establish local spheres of government. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws. Moses, you teach them the laws and let them take them home and apply them. Thou shalt show them the way wherein they must walk and the work that they must do. This is a foreshadowing of local self-government. We see nowhere in history where people are asked to apply the law to their own circumstances. Thou shalt provide out of all the people able men such as fear of God. Remember we alluded to the idea that self-government in the political sphere was when you choose your own rulers. And what kind of rulers do you choose? The kind that God would have you choose. And here are the qualifications of civil rulers according to the word of God in Exodus. And this is what makes us biblical in that we use the Bible as our guide, that self-government, to elect or choose our own rulers. And what are those qualifications? Able men, not incapable, but able men. Men who have the gift of administration, men who are capable and have the ability to rule, those that fear God, who have an awe and reverence for the higher power, who are not a law unto themselves, but themselves are under the laws of God, men of truth, men who love truth, men who abide by the truth, men who understand absolute law, absolute truths, and they hate covetousness. They do not covet what they may not have. They do not desire what they may not lawfully have. That's covetousness. They cannot be bought. They cannot be bribed. And place such over them, what, rulers of thousands. That's a larger sphere. But even then, rulers of hundreds, that's an S there. Rulers of 50s and rulers of 10s, from the largest sphere to the most local sphere of families. These are tribes. These are families. This is, again, the foreshadowing of local self-government. And this is the manner in which Israel was to be governed. They were to be a republic. But we call it a theocratic republic because God gave them the laws. They did not make their own laws. God gave it to them. God external was setting up a republic, a representative government. He was their king. He was their judge. And what? He was their lawgiver. That's why it was a theocratic republic. And as far as I'm concerned, the only theocratic republic in history, because it was God. External. However, we remember the Israelites rejected God as their king. Poor Samuel thought it was him. No, it wasn't all about Samuel. It was all about their rejecting God's rule. And that he gave them over to monarchy. Be careful what you wish for, right? And so if we go up a little bit here, they were lawgivers of a free nation, set apart from the rest of the world. They were independent. Israel was to be independent, not under any other nation. And of course, we became an independent nation. And what laws did we set? We find here that, We find, go back up that column on the right-hand side. We had a union. We was formed Despite all, one of the greatest achievements of the era was the attainment of solid union. The revolution provided the background. George Washington saw the vital necessity and was the unquestioned architect of our national unity. He presided, of course, over the Constitutional Convention when the representatives came from each state to set up one law over the land. And Washington was the only individual all 13 states trusted to preside over such a union. He had such a reputation. But remember that each state was very jealous of its own sovereignty, of its own independence. They declared themselves independent, and they had set up a weak national government. And Washington saw that we were liable to be tethered apart, and because the union was not strong, there had to be a more binding agreement than the Articles of Confederation, as you see. So we had 12 years between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution to develop something, a more solid union, a more perfect union. Remember, why do states come together? To be more secure together than without being together. And they discovered that under the Articles of Confederation, they were not secure together. So Washington began to initiate a meeting. The American Revolution marked a change to government by consent of the governed. It resulted in the establishment of a representative republic in which the power remained essentially in the hands of the people. Here, the leadership of George Washington was the decisive controlling factor. Many had written and talked. He was the single individual who had the leadership. And not only the leadership ability, but also the respect of those to follow. The prestige and the selflessness, this is his reputation, to support and implement such a monumental change. He was the only individual in whom the people had faith, the only leader with the following and the power to achieve the great change. And that's why he was the president of the Constitutional Convention. He presided. He's a silent voice. He was silent pretty much throughout all of the convention, but just his presence was calming. Do you understand? That's a quiet leadership. And so he sat there, presided over the debates, presided all of the controversies, and that's his important part as the lawgiver. But he was not inactive. He used the time to prepare the way for the change he hoped one day be effected. The whole scheme was given great added impetus when it became known that Washington had been chosen as a delegate and had agreed to attend. The assurance that he would participate was important in securing the final approval of the Federal Congress and the agreement of many of the states to participate. Federal, by the way, means covenant. We'll talk about that in the next presentation. But when we say federal constitution, it means a covenant. A constitution by covenant. It doesn't mean what we see today. This great figure, quiet, highly respected, at times even awesome, was at its best throughout the Constitutional Convention. The guidance, the control, and the path to be followed in the development of the Constitution were all left in Washington's hands. The logical forward progress of the debates, the complete fairness of the chairman, and the constant adherence to proper objectives are themselves almost as worthy of study as the Constitution itself. You see, he had traveled throughout all the colonies. They all knew Washington. They had met him. He had been in their state during the war. So again, that was divine preparation for what role he would play in the writing and the laying down of the Constitution of the United States of America.
That was kind of like his first campaign trail. Maybe
that's what unknown to him. That's a good way of seeing it. Okay, so. He also gave us in his farewell address guidance. His farewell address is one of those political scriptures vital to our understanding of who we are. And he gave wise counsel in his farewell address, now ending his call as first president, presiding officer of this nation. And he gave caution and wise counsel. We'll look at that more specifically as we get to the farewell address. It's a very lengthy speech. It ought to be studied by the students before they leave your school in high school. It's vital that they understand the principles of the farewell address. And you know, didn't Moses have a farewell address? Do you know he had a farewell address? So both Moses and Washington had farewell addresses. And he says in Deuteronomy 31, 1 through 6, 16 through 18, and 30, I can no more go out and come in. In other words, my term of office is over, Moses says. Okay. Also, the Lord hath said unto me, thou shalt not go over this Jordan. I must leave you. The Lord thy God, he will go over before thee, and he will destroy these nations from before thee, and thou shalt possess them. And Joshua, he shall go over before thee, as the Lord hath said. And the Lord shall go do unto them as he did to Sion and to Og, kings of the Amorites, and unto the land of them whom he destroyed. Now that's Moses' farewell to his people. He also says something else, doesn't he? And this is important to remember. Be strong and of good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. Let me go further here. Let's see if this is here. Okay. He encourages them, be strong and of good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is who doth go before thee. He will not fail thee nor forsake thee. And then finally he says, for I know that what? After my death, you will utterly corrupt yourselves. How about that? When I'm gone, this next generation will corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I've commanded you. And evil will befall you in the latter days, because ye will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke them to anger, to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. Moses said that to the Israelites. You'll go in, you'll be victorious, and you know what? You're going to fall away. And in Washington's address, of course, you're going to see some of his remarks. He summarized domestic and foreign policy for us. He set up the architect, or he set up the principles for both domestic and foreign policy. He told us we should avoid permanent alliances. Did we? No. He said, stay out of debt. Did we? He said, don't put on the next generation's back your debt. Did we listen? He said, set up a strong defense. You want to keep the peace? Set up a strong defense. Because the great offense is a great defense. Something like that, right? If you play football, that's what they teach, I think. And war. Did we do that? I want to tell you that if we could explain what happened to America from the founding to this day, we left our principles after the generation after Washington, just like the generation after Moses. Very similar. And so when we put up Washington as the Moses of America, there are parallels that we can cite and see. And what happened? Because that's the bibliography, but we began to worship the work of our hands. The wealth, the flourishing of economy that came, we forgot, and our affluence. I was remarking at lunchtime to someone, we need a people who take nothing for granted. Nothing for granted. Be grateful for every breath, everything. And when we have a people who do not take stuff for granted, then we're going to be able not to be drawn away by stuff. Do you understand what I'm trying to say here? So we're dealing with human character, and we're dealing with history and what it teaches us. So as we go on now, any questions then? Do you see why we might say that Washington is the Moses of America, both dealing with nations? You have this that follows afterwards, do you not? 20th century Americans' understanding of God. Do you have that one after?